What's University Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting the U.S. and Russia are close to an agreement. U.S. and Russian defense officials have concluded a third round of talks on rules for conduct in the air over Syria. They are finalizing a memorandum of understanding that will establish basic safety rules. The U.S. State Department says Secretary of State John Kerry is not blaming one side or the other for the wave of Palestinian stabbings and attacks against Israelis. Spokesman John Kirby says Mr. Kerry wants to see violence stopped and that the secretary will travel to the region.
So obviously that would be foremost on his mind as he travels to the region, which will happen soon. I just don't know when that's going to be.
Meanwhile, the Israeli security cabinet has given police permission to seal off Arab neighborhoods of Jerusalem from which many of the attackers have come. President Barack Obama is sending U.S. military personnel to Cameroon to conduct airborne surveillance of Boko Haram militants. A U.S. official said the troops were invited by Cameroon's government as part of a larger international effort to stop the spread of violent extremism in West Africa. Afghan officials say at least 22 border police and 35 Taliban insurgents were killed when fighting erupted in southern Helmand province. The officials say about a dozen Afghan security personnel were wounded in the violence in Nazad district. Iran's Guardian Council has approved the implementation of the country's recent nuclear agreement. Iran's parliament had passed the bill, approving the accord on Tuesday. The endorsement by the Guardian Council Wednesday means that the bill has been passed into law. For more, check our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. The U.S. State Department said Wednesday that a range of terrorist organizations and other non-state groups are guilty of harsh and hateful treatment of various religious groups throughout the Middle East, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Asia. In its 17th annual report on international religious freedom, the State Department said religious groups in those regions have been targeted for abuse and discrimination. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry briefed reporters.
Turkey's interior.
The message at the heart of this report is that countries benefit when their citizens fully enjoy the rights to which they are entitled. And this is not a hopeful theory. This is a proven reality.
John Kerry. Doctors Without Borders said that an international commission has been formed to investigate the U.S. bombing of its hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan, earlier this month. The medical charity said the Swiss-based International Humanitarian Fact-Finding Commission has been activated at the request of a state that it did not name. It says the commission is awaiting a final agreement from Afghanistan and the United States to proceed. Guinea's main opposition candidate, Selu Dalin Diallo, has dropped out of the presidential election because of what he says is fraud by the government. Diallo's Union for the Democratic Forces of Guinea said Wednesday he will refuse to recognize the results. Other opposition candidates have already denounced the election as a grand deception. One Ukrainian soldier has been killed and two wounded by rebel fire in eastern Ukraine near the rebel stronghold of Donetsk. The violence comes in violation of a ceasefire agreement between Ukraine and separatist forces. Russia has asked the International Civil Aviation Organization to open a new investigation into the downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 last year over eastern Ukraine. Speaking Wednesday in Moscow, deputy head of the Russian Federal Aviation Agency, Oleg Storchevoy, disputed the results of a Dutch probe and said Russia has a right to initiate a renewal of the investigation. The Dutch-led investigative panel into the crash said in a report released Tuesday, the plane was shot down by a Russian-made surface-to-air missile. The U.S. Justice Department is creating a new position to coordinate investigations into the growing number of domestic terrorism cases in the United States. John Carlin, the head of the Law Enforcement Agency's National Security Division, told a group at George Washington University Wednesday that the new official, yet to be named, would lead efforts to develop strategies to thwart new U.S.-based attacks and oversee prosecution of suspected terrorists. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Provisional results from Guinea's presidential election are expected tomorrow, Friday.
Guinea's National Independent Electoral Commission estimates voter turnout was about 75%, but so far the vote tallies have been slow to reach Conakry.
That's VOA correspondent Chris Stein in Conakry. Uganda's Electoral Commission releases a revised timetable for the country's 2016 presidential election. Amnesty International says Burkina Faso's now disbanded presidential guard killed 14 anti-coup protesters in September. And a new study says the Ebola virus remains in the semen of male survivors months after recovery.
We found presence of Ebola virus in the semen up to 9 months. So for these men that have positive semen, there is a risk of exposure to the virus for their sexual partners.
Natalie Brule is WHO's chief medical officer and one of the authors of this study. Burundian police are accused of killing civilians during a raid to rescue a kidnapped officer. Timbuktu's destroyed mausoleums are rising again, and a combination of factors threaten the livelihoods of Kenya's Turkana region residents. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and Our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting from Guinea's Sunday presidential election continues. The Electoral Commission says it hopes to announce provisional results tomorrow, Friday, although returns appear to be coming in at a very slow rate. Meanwhile, the country's main opposition party has announced it has withdrawn from the electoral process. Chris Stein reports for VOA from the capital, Conakry.
By car and by plane, results from polling stations across Guinea are making their way to be added up in the capital. The country held its second ever democratic vote for president on Sunday. President Alpha Conde is running for a second term against seven challengers, including three former prime ministers. Guinea's National Independent Electoral Commission estimates voter turnout was about 75%, but so far the vote tallies have been slow to reach Conakry. A spokesman for the commission, Salifu Kebi, said Wednesday that they have received results from two neighborhoods in the capital and one of the country's 33 prefectures. The commission has already received results from 11 polling stations in Guinea's embassies abroad. Results from some of Guinea's more remote regions were expected to arrive by air. Guinea does not allow the transmission of results electronically. Still, Kebi says Guineans can expect a vote count within a couple of days. If there are no delays or problems at the collation centers, Kebi says he expects the commission to finish counting the votes on Friday. Observers from the European Union said on Tuesday that the elections were free and fair, but also messy. They said disorganized voter lists and lack of envelopes for ballots led to delays at polling stations. Some polling stations had to extend their voting hours due to long lines of voters, a move that was criticized by the opposition. Kebi defended the decision to prolong voting.
C'est les dispositions de l'article 11 de la Constitution qui fait d'un droit absolu.
Kebi says that in Article 11 of the Constitution, the right to vote is absolute. They wanted to make sure everyone whose name was on the voter list was able to cast their ballot. Guinea's main opposition party, the Union of Democratic Forces of Guinea, announced Wednesday evening that they had withdrawn entirely from the electoral process. The party had earlier alleged massive fraud in the vote and called for it to be annulled. Chris Stein for VOA News, Conakry.
Uganda's Electoral Commission has revised its timetable for political parties to nominate their presidential candidates ahead of the 2016 general elections. The commission also says only four presidential aspirants out of the 49 who filled out nomination forms met all requirements. Jotham Taramua, spokesman for the Electoral Commission, tells reporter Peter Clotty that official campaigning for the presidential election will begin on November 9th this year and ends February 2016.
We simply revised the date. So the new date, we are scheduled for 3rd and the 4th of November 2015, when we shall be nominating the presidential candidate to participate in the 2016 general election.
Looking at the preparation ahead of next year's election, how are things moving now?
Things are moving on well. We have just had elections at parish level for the youth, the people with disabilities, and the older persons. We addressed a press conference in which we restated the date for the nomination and tried to emphasize the need for the aspirants to follow the guidelines issued to them and ensure that they don't charge up the environment. The environment remains calm, remains peaceful as we prepare and then flag them off for official campaign.
How is the Electoral Commission working with the political parties to ease tension?
We work closely with the political parties, and there is an official forum, a constitutional forum, called the National Consultative Forum. We have periodical meetings with party leaders in that forum, and whichever issues that may bring in misunderstandings, they try to be ironed out during that forum. As and when there is need, we invite and interact with them and discuss and understand one another.
But knowing that violence could affect the outcome of the election and the credibility thereof, is there a working relationship with security agencies to ensure violence is eliminated?
Very, very, very correct, Peter. We intend to have a number of engagements with the security agencies, with the Uganda police, with party leaders and our development partners. We are going to have periodical meetings in which any issues that arise, we are able to openly discuss them and agree on the way forward. But what I want to state is that there's not going to be violence. Security is on alert, secure electoral environment. So we are not bothered. We know we have had elections before. There could be cases of isolated incidents of violence here and there, but not necessarily to affect the electoral environment and the electoral process.
Joe Taremua is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Uganda. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. Amnesty International has accused Burkina Faso's now disbanded presidential guard of killing 14 protesters and bystanders during anti-coup protests in September. In a report released on Wednesday, Amnesty said none of those killed, including two children, had been armed or posed any threat to security forces. Gaetan Mutu, Amnesty International researcher, says the group is requesting an independent investigation.
The main message is regarding the number of people who were killed during the coup d'etat in September. We have investigated 11 cases on the 14 cases which were brought to our attention. In addition to that, many people were beaten and there were some threats on freedom of expression. Journalists have been beaten. Their cameras and materials have been confiscated. So what we are asking, for a commission of inquiry so that justice could be seen to be done.
What are you waiting for, the commission?
We are asking for the establishment of a commission of inquiry so that they could just set light on what happened last year in October and November, and also what happened in September this year, where people were extrajudicially killed on a few occasions.
What are your reservations?
What we are saying is that there is a tendency throughout the world for the civil tribunals to replace military tribunals. What we are asking is that, for example, if a soldier had not been very disciplined, he should be tried by a military tribunal. Whereas on the question of human rights violations, which we have registered, we are asking that at the same time, military personnel and civilians should be tried by a civil court. What we are saying is that the government is trying to do its best, but at the same time, what we are arguing is that there should be a commission of inquiry, an independent commission of inquiry, so that they could just set light on the events which happened last year and this year.
Can you talk about the baby who received a bullet?
What we notice is that we went in an area not far away from the hospital Paul VI, who gave birth to a child. And during, on a particular day during the coup, that person was shot by a bullet and she had to undergo an operation at the hospital. And when the baby was born, she had the bullet in her body and then afterwards, which was extracted afterwards.
Gaetan Mutu is a researcher with Amnesty International. He was speaking in Ouagadougou with Bagasi Koura of VOA's French 2 Africa service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 15th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Burundian officials said 10 people were killed Tuesday this week, including a journalist, his family, and one policeman during an attempt to rescue a kidnapped police officer in the capital, Bujumbura. Mohamed Yusuf has more from VOA's East Africa Bureau in Nairobi.
Burundian police spokesman Pierre Nkurukiye says police launched a rescue operation after gunmen abducted three officers on patrol in the Ngangara neighborhood of northern Bujumbura.
Criminals, when shooting, they used some houses occupied by some families. Some members have been killed during the shooting between the criminals and the national police members.
Among the nine civilians killed was a cameraman working for state-run television. His wife and two children were also among the dead. Police contend it was the criminals' bullets that killed the family during crossfire. The head of the Reporters Without Borders Africa desk, Claire Kanschreiber, condemned the killing.
It seems to be that the police was conducting a raid in the neighbourhood and they broke down the door of this journalist and killed him, his wife and his two children in a completely arbitrary way.
Witnesses and officials say some residential areas believed to be anti-government in central Bujumbura have seen multiple disarmament raids. Last month, the U.S. State Department called on Burundi's government to disarm all militias, including the ruling party's youth wing, the Imbonerakure, to prevent a further escalation of violence. Some residents accused the government of taking revenge against them for demanding that President Pierre Nkurunziza not run for a third term. President Nkurunziza was re-elected in July, but only after a wave of protest. His opponents said he was violating term limits in the constitution and the peace deal that ended Burundi's civil war. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A new study finds that the Ebola virus can persist in the semen of male survivors months after they recover from the deadly disease. 93 men participated in the study, which was conducted jointly by the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation, the World Health Organization, and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Researchers looked at the presence of Ebola in the semen of men who had been declared free of the disease. Nathalie Brouté is the WHO's medical officer and one of the study's lead authors. She tells VOA the semen of the 93 participants was tested at different stages after recovery to see how long the virus persists.
We found presence of Ebola virus in the semen up to 9 months. So for these men that have positive semen, there is a risk of exposure to the virus for their sexual partners.
Brouté says the focus of the study is on the persistence of the Ebola virus in semen, not on the risk of transmission. She says the possible sexual transmission of the virus from the semen of survivors to their partners and the magnitude of that risk will be analyzed in another study. This study shows the virus remains considerably longer in semen than previously thought, but the concentration of the virus declines in the months after recovery from Ebola. It finds a very high presence of the virus in the semen 3 months after recovery. This decreases drastically after 6 months of survival. Brouté says it is still not known how long it takes for the virus to disappear completely. Therefore, she says, WHO recommends survivors receive support, appropriate and continuing counseling and follow-up testing. She says in the first 3 months after recovery, male survivors should abstain from sex or use condoms. Brouté says a major study to begin at the end of the month will look at the persistence of Ebola in 7 body fluids among 240 men and women survivors. These include tears, sweat, vaginal secretions, semen, rectal swabs, urine, and menstrual blood. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Timbuktu's historic mausoleums, destroyed during the Islamist occupation of the city in northern Mali, have risen from the ruins. Local builders pressed ahead with efforts to rebuild the structures, even as the United Nations struggles to raise money for the campaign. Katerina Hoyer reports for VOA from Timbuktu.
Alassan Hassei, the head maison of Timbuktu, gently unwraps a piece of his turban. This is a half a meter. Unfolded, it's 1 meter, he says. Before the French arrived and we switched to the metric system, builders used the turbans to measure the houses. When efforts by the UN to restore the mausoleums destroyed by jihadists dragged on, Mr. Hassay, a traditional builder, decided to take matters into his own hands. Starting with the library next to the historic Jengabaya Mosque, he began to rebuild what occupiers had torn down. When they began the destruction of Timbuktu, we, the population, suffered, he says. We tried to tell them that this is part of the world heritage, but they wouldn't listen, and you don't fight someone holding a gun. When the Islamists finally left, we didn't have the means to rebuild the mausoleums, says Hassay. The jihadists destroyed a total of 40 mausoleums in Timbuktu during the occupation of the city and others in northern Mali during 2012. Recently, an alleged Islamic fighter charged with the destruction of the mausoleums and a mosque appeared at the International Criminal Court. The 40-year-old civil servant is the first suspect in the court's custody charged with the war crime of attacking religious or historical monuments. Human rights groups have welcomed the arrest of the alleged attacker while urging prosecutors to file more charges against him, including rape and forced marriage.
Ils ont occupé le stade, ils sont installés au stade, ils ont pris ce qu'ils ont pris.
The Islamists took what they wanted, they looted and pillaged, but they also committed crimes that were far more serious than the burning of, for example, the manuscripts, says Mohamed Diallo, the caretaker of a small library in Timbuktu. Timbuktu is a historic center of Islamic learning and listed as a World Heritage Site. When the jihadists forced their harsh version of Islamic law on the population, they also took away part of the city's soul, says Ibrahima Fofana with the government's World Heritage Department. Social and financial structures were disrupted during the occupation, he says. It's not just about restoring historic buildings, but to regain our heritage and the way citizens included the mausoleums into their daily life. The mausoleums have been restored. What's left is a monument, the mosque and manuscripts. UNESCO is attempting to raise 11 million to help restore Timbuktu's cultural treasures. 6 months after announcing the project, UNESCO has raised only $3 million. Katerina Höje for VOA News, Timbuktu.
A combination of climate change and regional development are threatening the livelihoods of people in Kenya's Turkana region, according to a Human Rights Watch report released today, Thursday. Felix Horn, a researcher for Human Rights Watch, tells Rekish Triak about decreased access to water and other issues facing residents of Turkana.
Climate change is impacting human rights in Turkana in several ways. It's making it more difficult to access food for the pastoralists that live there. It's making it more difficult to access water in terms of women and girls have to walk further. They have to dig deeper to access water. It's the increased competition over grazing land that's coming about as a result of both population growth, but also the lack of rainfall resulting in less grazing land is meaning that there's more conflict between the Turkana and neighboring tribes.
Are these changes that technology or other tools could allow the people to actually adapt to, or are these things that can't be adapted to, really?
Well, this is one of the problems. I mean, Turkana has always been an area that's been very dry and arid, and drought has always been a feature of life there. But there's often been sort of alternate livelihoods that the Turkana could turn to, like fishing in nearby Lake Turkana, which is, you know, the world's largest desert lake. But what we're seeing is that in Ethiopia, there's all of these developments happening along the Omo River Valley, which the Omo River supplies 90% of the water in Lake Turkana. And what that means is that Lake Turkana in the next 5 to 10 years could conceivably dry up, which means that alternative livelihood for Turkana who have lost their animals to drought is essentially gone.
There's upcoming climate change negotiations in Bonn in Germany, and it's going to discuss how human rights will be integrated into an international agreement on climate change. What do you think the Kenyan government can do at this point to help ease these issues surrounding the Turkana people?
One of the things that the Turkana case study shows us is that are felt disproportionately by those vulnerable populations like indigenous peoples, women, children, etc. But that's not necessarily being reflected in the negotiations at a global level. So what we'd hope is that Kenya can play a leading role in pushing for human rights language to be included in the final agreement so that these sorts of concerns can be addressed.
That was Felix Horn, a researcher with Human Rights Watch, speaking to Ricky Shryak from Nairobi. Twenty-five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African Sports News, we begin with cricket. Uganda opened their campaign against the United States of America at the ICC Under-19 Cricket World Cup qualifiers in Pandamaran, Malaysia, today, Thursday. Tomorrow, Friday, they face Nepal before engaging Papua New Guinea in Kinara on Sunday. On Monday, they complete the round-robin phase of the contest against Ireland. Initially set for April in Nepal, the tournament was rescheduled and taken to Malaysia following the devastating earthquake that ravaged Nepal. The winner of this playoff qualifies for the 2016 ICC Under-19 Cricket World Cup in Bangladesh. Turning to football, South Africa held hosts Honduras to a 1-1 draw in San Pedro on Tuesday, while Swaziland host Djibouti in the return leg of their preliminary Africa 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifier in Lobambo on Saturday. Swaziland won the first leg 6-0 in Djibouti City. Meanwhile, Burundi host Ethiopia in Bujumbura in the opening leg of the penultimate round in the African Nations Championship CHAN qualifiers on Saturday. Mali play Mauritania while the Democratic Republic of Congo engages the Central African Republic. Elsewhere, Niger welcome Togo to Niamey. Cameroon play the Republic of Congo. Zambia face Mozambique. Guinea engage Senegal and Chad encounter Gabon. On Sunday, Zimbabwe host Lesotho in Bulawayo. Nigeria welcome Burkina Faso in Port Harcourt, River State. And Ghana engage the visiting Ivory Coast in Kumasi. In basketball, Algeria is Africa's most improved men's basketball team, while Cameroon has slipped by the widest margin following the recent Africa Olympic qualifiers. The World Basketball Governing Body, FIBA, disclosed in Mayes, Switzerland. Ranked 15th, Angola is the highest placed African team. Tunisia is 23rd, while African champions Nigeria are 25th. Senegal is 31st, Ivory Coast 40th, Egypt 41st, Cameroon 52nd, while Central African Republic and Mali share 57th spot and Morocco is 60th. Meanwhile, following the recent Olympic qualifiers, Egypt is the most improved women's team, while Cape Verde Islands slipped by the widest margin. Ranked 18th, Angola is Africa's highest-ranked female team. Mali is 19th. African champions Senegal are 24th. Mozambique 28th. Cameroon 39th. Nigeria 42nd. Ivory Coast 53rd. Egypt 60th. Rwanda 61st. And Guinea 62nd. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. President Barack Obama is sending U.S. military personnel to Cameroon to conduct airborne surveillance of Boko Haram militants. The president announced the deployment in a letter sent Wednesday to the heads of the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. The letter makes no mention of Boko Haram, but White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said the move is part of a regional effort to stop the spread of the Nigerian militant group and other extremists. Guinea's main opposition candidate, Selou Daline Diallo, has dropped out of the presidential election because of what he says is fraud by the government. Diallo's Union for the Democratic Forces of Guinea said Wednesday he will refuse to recognize the results. Other opposition candidates have already denounced the election as a grand deception. And Burkina Faso's presidential and parliamentary elections, delayed by a failed coup, will take place on November 29th. The polls, seen as a major step in the impoverished West African country's road to democracy, were originally scheduled for October 11th. That is it for this Thursday, October 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Butter saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.